This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 15th of September 2017. Hello and welcome to your edition of the Winchester Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 15th of September 2017, which this week have been edited by Sheila Shepherd, Jane Thomas and Jean Gardner. Your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Noel Thorpe Tracy. The main headlines this week are Go Ahead for GP's Surgery to Relocate, Anger at Cuts Plans, New £10 Austin Note Available First in City. So, may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather.
Go Ahead for GP's Surgery to Relocate. The new Winchester City Centre doctor's surgery has been given the green light after a series of false starts. The relocation of the St Clement's surgery in Tanner Street to the site of the Upper Brook Street car park is expected to be completed by May 2019, having previously been forecast for completion by December this year. A design for the new surgery was prepared by Winchester firm Architecture PLB and was granted planning permission in 2012, but the delays with the development of the Silver Hill meant planning permission expired and a modified version was approved in March 2016. The surgery building in Tanner Street was bought by Councillor Kim Gottlieb in December last year for an undisclosed seven-figure sum with the intention to pass ownership to a new civic trust. Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of Winchester City Council, said at Cabinet on Tuesday she was delighted that the development would be going ahead. Councillor Jackie Porter said, "I welcome this proposal. It has a huge amount of social capital and is really practical. It is vital that at least one of our doctor's surgeries is based in Winchester City Centre." Councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder for professional services, said, "I am delighted we have got this far and can deliver on promises that me and my predecessors made to the people of Winchester. 17,000 patients can look forward to improved facilities and the City Council should be proud to deliver this." A lease has also been agreed with Lloyd's Pharmacy. There's a picture of the surgery. It's a modern rectangular building, big windows, in a nice light-coloured sort of brick or stone. Very pleasant. The closure of the car park will result in a loss of 58 short-stay parking spaces in the city centre, although 73 spaces have recently been provided at the partially reopened Friarsgate car park. And it's anticipated that construction work will begin early in 2018 and take around 12 months. All three GP surgeries were once based in the city centre, Friarsgate, Riverside and St Clement's. Riverside moved to the above Waitrose. I beg your pardon. Riverside moved to the former St Paul's Hospital site at Oram's Arbour, and Friarsgate relocated to above the Waitrose store in Stockbridge Road, Week.
Anger at Cuts Plans. Community leaders and campaigners have condemned proposals to drastically slash funding from vital services and shut up to half the county's recycling centres. Following months of public consultation, Hampshire County Council officers have suggested almost £20 million could be saved by the tabled cuts, which could see school crossing patrols, £1.2 million, subsidised bus services and community transport, such as Dala Ride and Call and Go, combined £4 million, lose their entire funding. The proposed cuts are part of a plan by the council to address an anticipated budget shortfall of £140 million by April 2019. And they also suggest that £1.2 million could be saved by closing household waste recycling centres, £100,000 per site, and amending the hours of the rest. The council has not confirmed which sites are threatened. Romsey Town Liberal Democrat councillor Mark Cooper has accused council heads of destroying essential services. Waiting until the county elections are over and then launching the total dismemberment of numerous essential services is cynical in the extreme, added Councillor Cooper. However, Conservative council leader Roy Perry has defended the council's decision to make these tough decisions. We have been reporting for some time now that opportunities for reducing costs are getting harder to find, he added. With less money available and growing demand for council services, tough decisions are having to be made about what the county council can and cannot do in the future. Residents have told us that they continue to support our financial strategy, which has involved targeting resources to those who need them most, planning ahead and securing savings early. To date, this approach has helped the County Council to invest in new, more efficient ways of working and has helped to minimise the impact on frontline services as far as possible. However, we now have to consider more radical ways of making ends meet. Inevitably, this will involve changes to the way services are delivered and further reductions in our workforce. It is too early to predict what the precise impact will be as plans are still evolving. As reported last year, residents took to the streets across the county to protest the proposed closures of household waste recycling centres as part of a previous round of council savings. Regarding crossing patrols, Winchester City Councillor Jamie Scott, who represents the St Luke ward, added, "I'm pleased that Stanmore Primary School has a new crossing patrol guard. Safety around schools is paramount, and if safety is called into question, I would challenge the council to rethink. The council needs to take responsibility." Michael Cleary, clerk of Oslebury and Morstead Parish Council, condemned the proposed cuts to bus subsidies. He said, "Oslebury would be very badly affected if subsidies were withdrawn. It has no rail links and is now reliant on a greatly reduced bus service. The older population and youngsters that can't drive are dependent on the buses." Proposals to deliver this latest round of savings will be discussed in committee next week and considered by the County Council's Cabinet on Monday, October the 16th. A final decision will be made on November the 2nd, followed by a number of further consultations with residents and stakeholders.
And here we have new £10 Austin note available first in City. Winchester residents will be among the first to get their hands on the new £10 note featuring the face of Jane Austen. Cash Points in Winchester, where Jane Austen died, will be distributing the new polymer £10 notes as part of the launch today. That was possibly yesterday by the time you receive this. More than 1 billion of the new bank notes have been printed and will be sent out around the country over the coming weeks. Victoria Clayland, the Bank of England's chief cashier, said, "It is wonderful to see the inspirational author Jane Austen celebrated on the new £10, and even more poignant being launched during the 200th anniversary of her death. I'm grateful to the cash industry for their support in bringing the cleaner, safer, stronger notes to the public." The paper £10 notes featuring Charles Darwin will be gradually taken from circulation until legal tender status is withdrawn in spring 2018. The exact date will be announced at a later date. The new banknote, which is available from the Santander and NatWest branches in Winchester High Street, is the first in the UK with a tactile feature to support blind and partially sighted users, and joins the Winston Churchill £5 note that was launched in September last year in the first series of polymer Bank of England banknotes. A new £20 note featuring painter J.M.W. Turner will be launched in 2020. Mark Carney, Governor of the Bank of England, said, "Our banknotes serve as repositories of the country's collective memory, promoting awareness of the United Kingdom's glorious history and highlighting the contributions of its greatest citizens. The new £10 note celebrates Jane Austen's work. Austen's novels have a universal appeal and speak as powerfully today as when they were first published. The new £10 will be printed on polymer, making it safer, stronger and cleaner. And there is a photograph of the two notes, the £10 note above the £5 note, demonstrating that the new £10 is slightly bigger than the £5, only very slightly. And hopefully blind and partially sighted users will be able to identify the tactile feature.
Thank you. And that concludes the headline stories. And now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, letter from Westminster, your say, historical items, Belgarum diary, first person, my Winchester, and editorial comment. And I'll start with the death notices. There's only two today. Baker, Denise Baker, on 7th of September 2017 at Flowerdown Care Home, and Margaret Toombs, who passed away aged 77 years. So, we'll continue with the Christian comment, please, Heather.
Not angles, but angels. The Pope's legacy. Not angles, but angels are reputedly the words of Pope Gregory when confronted in the Roman marketplace with the sight of some miserable, fair-haired British slave boys. Gregory I, whose feast was September the 3rd, was Pope between 590 and 604 AD. When he was 2 years old, in 542, the plague swept through the region. About a third of the population was wiped out. The barbarian Ostrogoths sacked Rome in 546. The Franks attempted an invasion in 554. And it is thought that Gregory's family retreated to Sicily during part of this time. Peace then followed. Gregory, well educated, excelling in his studies and expert in law, became the prefect of Rome, aged 33. After his father's death, he converted the family villa in Rome into a monastery. As a monk, Gregory was strict. His career was meteoric. Pope Pelagius II chose Gregory as an ambassador to the Constantinople court. After the Pope's death, Gregory was proclaimed Pope by acclamation. He accepted the burden, making it clear that he preferred the monastic life and referred to himself as a servant of God. Gregory became famous for his emphasis on missionary work to bring people into the church, for example, dispatching St. Augustine of Canterbury to Kent in 597. He made many changes to the Mass. He may even have established plain chant. For deacons, he emphasised the aspect of service to the poor. He was well known for his alms to the poor. When a famine struck Rome in the 590s, Pope Gregory ordered the church to use its assets to feed the poor. At that time, the church controlled nearly 2,000 square miles of land, overseen by the clergy and used to generate income. Instead of selling the produce, Pope Gregory ordered it shipped to Rome and given away, saving thousands of people from death. He himself refused to eat until his monks returned from their work of handing out food, and often dined with a dozen poor people. We think of his reaction to meeting the slaves from Britain. Angles? Say rather they are angels. What a pity that God's grace does not dwell within those beautiful brows. Gregory purchased the slaves, brought them back with him, cared, instructed and baptised them. He longed to be off on a mission to convert their whole country, and he was able to win the permission of Pope Pelagius II to set out for England. However, he was recalled, so angry were the people of Rome at losing him. But Gregory never forgot his English children. In 596, he sent the Prior Augustine and 40 of his monks to preach the faith to the English. and the enormous success of this mission earned for England the honour of being called Our Lady's Dowry. It earned for Gregory the title of Apostle to the English, and for Augustine the distinction of being known as Saint Augustine of Canterbury.
Now we're going on with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's news at Hampshire Chronicle, which is all one word, lowercase, .co.uk. Or writing to the editor, in the old-fashioned way, at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. There are 15 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Nick.
Yes, and this one's entitled Too Minimalist. Sir, I use Winchester bus station at least 3 times a week when visiting Mum. The new station looks very clean and spacious, but is currently a bit on the minimalist side. To wit, where are the seats for waiting passengers? They've had 2 months or more in which to remove, repair, renovate or replace. Could it not have been done whilst the rebuild was going on? I realise having them back for the grand opening would have spoilt that wonderful open vista first impression like an empty show house. But they're not trying to sell the bus station to us, so why not have it properly up and ready for the off? Let us hope that the newly recovered areas don't leak like the old ones, and if so, that it is promptly dealt with. And why doesn't it have toilets? Talk about a missed opportunity. The ones across the road in the park are a disgrace. And that one comes from John Craggs, Somerset Crescent, Chandler's Ford.
And this letter from Dr. Anthony Harbutt is headed Centre Questions. Sir, I wish to draw the attention of you and your readers to the lack of response to the letter published in the Chronicle on Thursday, August the 17th, from Martin Wilson. Very serious matters were revealed relating to the management by the City Council of the River Park Leisure Centre during the last 32 years. We have been told that the leisure centre is so dilapidated and decayed that it will have to be replaced at great expense on an alternative site. Now, 3 weeks after Martin Wilson's detailed and explicit letter of these matters relating to the management of the leisure centre, there has been no response from the council. I and others are now made more aware of the situation and would have expected that there should have been some kind of monitoring and audit by the council of the work, if any, carried out by the contractor, not least to justify the annual rolling over of the budget in the last 32 years. In addition, we do not appear to have details of the financial audits of the income generated by the contractors during their many years of holding the contract. We now look forward to a competent explanation by the council of what has been going on and of what will be done to correct what appear to be expensive failings in their overall management of the leisure centre. And that was from Dr. Anthony Harbutt, Quarry Road, Winchester.
Chesil Lodge. Councillor Caroline Horrell writes, Sir, your article on the Chesil Lodge extra care development claiming extra care late and over budget in the Chronicle of August the 31st was incorrect and a misrepresentation of timely and innovative development for the city. Disappointingly, the article included several inaccuracies that were repeated in the Daily Echo several days after the facts were clarified to your reporter at a council meeting. In 2013, set aside £10.6 million. The council set aside £10.6 million, a sum intended to be ring-fenced towards the total cost of building more extra care housing to benefit elderly residents and those in need of residential support. At the time that this sum was allocated for this purpose, no design or location had been determined. The reservation of funds represented a commitment in principle. Following extensive design and community consultation, the Chesil Street scheme was approved in 2015 with a projected completion date of late 2017. With the scope and location of the development now fixed, the project was then costed at £15.3 million. This sum reflects the costs of development in a prime city centre location and the commitment to use high-quality materials and design. A 10% contingency was also allocated at this time to cover rising construction costs and unknown elements of the site, prompting unforeseen additional work. Since construction started, some additional work has been identified, which is not unusual for projects of this size. And as the provision of a contingency shows, this has been prepared for. The cost of this work has been fully met from the contingency budget. The contractor, Galliford Try, has experienced some challenges recently and are currently 3 months behind the agreed programme. However, all costs associated with a later handover will be met in full by Galliford Try and not the council. I am really excited about the Chesil Lodge development, which will provide 52 much-needed homes for older people and help them to live independently with the reassurance of on-site care and support if they need it. Interest and demand is already very high. By selling 2 flats on the open market and a further 6 for shared ownership, the council is able to let 44 homes at an affordable rent, which will be more than 20% less than a private rented flat. We will be opening the scheme in early 2018, and I look forward to celebrating something that will be a positive asset to the city, offering future homes for Winchester's residents. Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of Winchester City.
Better for the bid. And in this letter, bid means business improvement district. Sir, I read the letter, Hampshire Chronicle, September the 7th, from Chris Pollach, urging businesses to vote against the bid renewal vote later this year, and felt it deserved a response. As a board member of Winchester's Business Improvement District, I have in the past put an open invitation out to Mr. Pollach to meet him to try and address his obvious hostility, but as yet to no avail. Without sounding like an old-timer sat in my rocking chair reflecting on Winchester's commercial life over the last 30 years, I would wish to point out to Mr. Pollach that commercial life in the city centre without the bid would be a lot less attractive. And I'm not just referring to hanging baskets and Christmas lights. There is an increased, but sometimes discreet, security presence in the city, delivering a safer environment to those who live and work here. A diverted giving initiative to help reduce street begging, as well as the coordination of pub watch and shop watch schemes. The bid also supports many local marketing initiatives, helping to bring visitors into our city in preference perhaps to other cities. The increased vibrancy will keep businesses thriving, which in turn will perhaps give Mr. Pollach more choice when placing his English language students. The bid levy is a relatively small additional charge, and more than half the membership pay less than £225 per annum, which compares very favourably to my annual rates commitment of over £22,000. As such, it shouldn't be considered the final straw in a long list of obligatory taxes, but instead an additional and welcome contribution to making Winchester a safer, more connected and more presentable place to live, work and do business. I've worked here in the late 1980s through the 90s to the present day, and I really wouldn't want to return to the struggle Winchester businesses experienced in getting much needed investment into the city. And that letter's from Paul Morgan, Managing Director, Warren's Office, Moorside Road, Winnall.
And this letter from Dee Adcock, who lives in Dorchester, is headed Tale of Two Cities. Sir, it was an unexpected delight to come across the exhibition at the gallery in Winchester Discovery Centre, Turner and the Sun, during a visit to the city. The exhibition continues until October the 10th, and I hope many people will go along and enjoy seeing the many marvellous paintings and appreciate the supporting information that gives an insight into this great artist's work. Less delightful was the extremely loud and foul-mouthed behaviour from a drunk outside the cathedral at lunchtime. I'm surprised that he had the energy to sustain his energetic outburst that went on for at least half an hour and almost amounted to an assault on a young woman of his acquaintance. I know that the police were called. I don't know whether they eventually attended. Ah, well, Winchester, you win some, you lose some. And that was from Dee Adcock of Dorchester in Dorset.
And here's another one that Winchester won. Becky Brown writes, fabulous event. Sir, a huge thank you. Firstly to Nick Gottlieb for being such an inspiration to work with over the past year. I have had so much fun since joining the Winchester Heritage Open Days team and have also learnt so much about our wonderful city. I can't wait to begin planning 2018 with you, Mike Hall, and hopefully lots of new volunteers. And my second thank you is to all the wonderful event volunteers and organisations who ran such a brilliant event and helped create a fabulous festival last weekend. You made it our best year yet. Becky Brown, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
And following on from that, Kelly West of Hamilton Road, Bishopstoke, Eastleigh writes, opened eyes. Sir, I wanted to express my huge thanks to Winchester Heritage Open Days, or HODs as she calls them, for opening my eyes to the surroundings that I have lived in and taken for granted my whole life. Having lived in the area since birth, I have always been proud to class Winchester as home. Until finding out about the amazing Open Days that HODs had put on, I have to admit I walked around a little blind to exactly what the amazing city has to offer. The Winchester College tour was outstanding, and I know that the overall feel for the weekend has been one of great support and gratitude for the hard work put in by Winchester HODs and the event organisers. Roll on next year. I can't wait to find out more about the incredible city I live in.
And this letter from Daphne E. Smith is headed Back to Snail Mail. Sir, I have three nieces, and as they run my life, I refer to them as the three witches. Junior Witch, who is a businesswoman, is married to a computer wizard, and 20 years ago they led me into the world of technology, even though I was what was known in polite circles as a senior citizen. It took a while to take in the workings of the computer, but eventually the words flowed like a waterfall from my fingertips. I have always enjoyed writing, but didn't have the confidence to send articles anywhere for possible publication until 1966, and when two were accepted, I had found a new hobby. I had neither the ambition nor the know-how to produce a bestseller, so concentrated on items covering many varying subjects. Not everything I've sent has been printed, though over the years a fair amount has been. I started to contribute to the Chronicle in 1994. I obey the rule, so anything which exceeds 350 words, I send to other outlets. 3 weeks ago, I said a glad farewell to my computer. The wizard had set me up with a programme to suit my needs and had worked perfectly, but I became sick to death of the time-wasting of the constant updates and problems they seemingly caused. I know I am not the only one to complain, and this didn't keep happening in earlier times. To coin a modern phrase, I've been there, done that, got the T-shirt, but now it doesn't fit. I ordered an electric typewriter, which is ideal for my needs. I hope to carry on writing for a while yet, but my efforts will arrive by snail mail instead of email. And that was from Daphne E. Smith, of whom there are often letters printed, from Cheriton in Alsford.
University expansion dreaded, writes Rosemary Poole, And there's a photograph of architects presenting their plans for new accommodation in Sparkford Road to residents there in June. Sir, I was disappointed to read in a letter to the Chronicle on August the 31st that the university is planning to expand to take up to 10,000 students. I understand that this is their right, the government having lifted the cap on student numbers. Once again, it seems that the government has made decisions without understanding the effect they have locally. In this case, the unreasonable pressure the university is putting on the local infrastructure. Winchester already feels uncomfortably overcrowded and overbuilt, and this is before Barton Farm is anywhere near completion, and there are other developments in the pipeline. In addition, we read that many young people, wary of the huge amount of debt they will incur, are having second thoughts about university. But even if many of us feel that the university is getting much too big, who should challenge the Vice-Chancellor to rethink her plans? Rosemary Poole, St James Villas, Winchester.
And this one's from Dr Sarah Schofield, Chairman of the NHS West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group. And it's entitled Suicide Support. I was privileged to be invited to Romsey Abbey this week for the launch of a suicide awareness campaign by Hampshire Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, or CAMHS for short. Suicide has a lifelong effect on many people, but the impact is often unspoken and sometimes hidden. Hampshire CAMHS is aiming to raise awareness of suicide to highlight the importance of prevention, along with the desire to stimulate conversation about the subject. I represented NHS West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group at the launch of the Faces of You, which is an inspirational and thought-provoking exhibition. Several people spoke about how they have been affected by suicide, including Reverend Canon Tim Sledge, Dean of Romsey, who talked about the Abbey's approach to suicide following the loss of one of their community from suicide. We heard about the work of the Samaritans from Sue Fowler of Winchester Samaritans, and the photographer Xavier Fides discussed his approach to the topic. It was clearly an emotional journey for the young photographer, but one that was greatly valued. We also heard stories about people who had been personally affected by suicide. There was hardly a dry eye in the house. The photos are all constructed in the same way, with individuals as the main focus of each photo. Many of these portraits were linked with photographs of items that represented the person that they had lost, or items which related to their involvement with suicide. It's free and it will be in Romsey Abbey for 2 weeks. It is well worth a visit. And at the bottom there, you can get more information on www.romseyabbey.org or on Faces of You Photographic Exhibition, again online.
And this letter from Peter Rees is headed Childcare Chaos. Sir, if the Tory Brexit chaos wasn't enough, their abysmal failure to get 30 hours per week free childcare starting from September the 1st certainly adds to their current meltdown. They vindictively destroyed the Labour government's outstanding Sure Start provision, which provided early years and preschool education and childcare. Caroline Dynage, MP for Gosport and the Early Years Minister, is incandescent at the failure of HMRC to have the IT registration up and running prior to the start date. In the UK, 390,000 families are eligible, but only 200,000 have applied. In Hampshire, as in the whole UK, only 51% of eligible parents have been able to apply, 49% have been unable to register at all. The government says it costs only £3.72, £3.72, to mind a child per hour. The Preschool Alliance, 14,000 members, calculates the figure at £7.50 minimum. each nursery gets only £4.07 from the government. Some 74% of members say the funding does not cover the cost of free 30 hours. 38% of businesses will fail within 12 months and 52% will increase charges for meals, additional provisions, etc. This is a policy that has completely disintegrated. There was no need to eradicate Sure Start. Hampshire was one of many Tory-controlled county councils where Sure Start was appallingly sold off to the highest bidders, private profit from the under-fives being the purchaser's motivation. Nearly 60 locations were sold and then amalgamated into less than 12 to be run by private companies. Many of these were poor quality and failed, leaving parents with no education-based preschool childcare, another contribution to unemployment and austerity. After these sell-offs, the government announced plans for their own scheme. Families are now unable to register their children, businesses will fail, and this scheme is a shambles. The Labour Party recognises the priority need for efficiently run, fully funded preschool education with professionally managed childcare. Its own flagship provision will be introduced when it is elected to majority government at the next election. And that was from Peter Rees, chairman of the Winchester constituency Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
And another letter about the welfare of children entitled Stay Safe from Emma Aked and Jan MacDonald. Sir, last year was a very busy year for the NSPCC's Speak Out, Stay Safe programme in Hampshire. Our trained volunteers spoke to 38,086 children, delivering assemblies and workshops to children aged 4 to 11. Speak Out, Stay Safe teaches children in an age-appropriate way about the different forms of abuse, how to keep themselves safe, and who to go to for help should they ever need it. By the end of our visit, we feel pupils are empowered and can speak out and stay safe from abuse. Our volunteers have done an incredible job, and it's thanks to them that we've been able to visit 161 schools in the area, delivering these vital safeguarding messages. But we've not yet been into every school, and we want to speak to all 4 to 11 year olds and hopefully protect a generation of children from abuse, one school at a time. If you would like us to come to your school, please get in touch with me by emailing emma.aked@nspcc.org.uk or janine.macdonald@nspcc.org.uk. It's completely free and it could make a massive difference to the lives of children in the area. Emma Aked and Jan MacDonald, NSPCC School Service Area Coordinators for Hampshire.
Mike Kennedy from South Wanston has written about Brexit. The EU repeal bill was debated in Parliament on Monday. The bill is central to the government's plan to exit the EU in 2019. Because it releases Britain from more than 40 years of the supremacy of EU laws, and it repeals the 1972 treaty that made Britain a member of the EU. It is important that people realise that if the bill doesn't pass, then Britain will remain under the remit of EU law. It is therefore very disappointing that MPs oppose the bill. Any effort to oppose the bill, or to dilute it via a succession of wrecking amendments, would effectively prevent Britain leaving the EU and would fly in the face of the decision Britain made last year to leave the EU. Chairman of Change Britain and former Labour MP Gisela Stewart says, "The repeal bill is the first essential step in leaving the EU and will enable us to take back control of our laws in an orderly way. MPs must now do their democratic duty and vote for it. MPs should work to make a success of Brexit, not try to frustrate last year's referendum result. I would encourage those who feel as I do to write to their MP and ask them to support the bill and to honour the will of the people to leave the EU."
And Councillor Anne Weir writes, "Thanks, IBM. Sir, I had the rare opportunity to visit Hursley House for the first time during this year's Heritage Open Days and would like to thank the IBM team for their great welcome and enthusiasm in guiding us around this special venue. The house and gardens are lovely and well worth the visit alone, but the museum was certainly the highlight for my party. We've grown up with much of the evolving technology on display, which progressively transformed our working lives. It was a real privilege to see the collection. Well done, IBM, and thank you, Winchester Heritage Open Days." And that was from Councillor Anne Weir, City Councillor and Chairman, Winchester Town Forum, Woodstock Court, Winchester.
We end returning to the Winchester News bus station. "Bus routes," writes AJ Carvel. "Sir, read the new bus station bus stops chronicle September the 7th. As the number 5 bus takes the same route out of the city to the train station and to the hospital as buses number 63, 66, 46, E1 and E2, it seems logical to have the bus stops next to each other, not 5 stops apart. AJ Carvel, Gadsden Street, Winchester."
Thank you. That was an entertaining set of letters. Now we're going to, Nick's going to read a regular letter from Westminster, this week written by George Hollingbury MP.
"As you can imagine, as a politician, I do spend rather a lot of time talking about Brexit, and this summer has been no exception. Despite what some say, the government has a coherent plan and a good negotiating team looking after the interests of a major country, a country at the top table in trade, influence and military power. And although I am someone who voted to stay in the European Union and would do so again, I remain convinced that there is a positive future for the UK outside the EU. This, sadly, is not what some Remainers really want to hear. Now, many of these ultra-Remain people tend to be middle-class metropolitan types who have got very angry indeed that we are leaving. Of course, very few I ever speak to actually campaign to stay. Many a meeting this summer has led to some pretty illiberal comments from self-proclaimed liberals. And I'm absolutely not pointing the finger at the Liberal Democrat Party here, suggesting that people who voted to leave shouldn't even be allowed to vote, or they were hoodwinked, racist and stupid. I've been caught up in a few of these discussions. Time and again it is implied that large parts of the electorate were incapable of understanding the issues. In my feistier moments, I pointed out this argument isn't a million miles away from those employed by people 100 years ago to oppose women having the vote. Of course, everyone has a world view. Everyone has their right to an opinion. But to have such disregard for those who voted to leave and their views is troubling. And I have said so. One woman in the street told me, with a straight face, that allowing Brexit to progress was similar to tolerating the rise of the Nazis. It is right of everyone to continue to oppose Brexit, and this is invaluable in our democracy. But to disparage leavers in the terms I have mentioned is not opposition, it's intolerance, and it shows a lack of understanding towards people from all walks of life across Britain. It's language that many of these people would never use in any other context because they think themselves tolerant. But now they seem to be in a blind spot. I would also note that one of the people I have ever argued with over this point ever said to me before last year the EU was a wonderful construct. Perhaps it's a fear of the unknown, a fear of the real possibility of economic downturn, concerned Britain will be isolated. All these and many others are perfectly legitimate issues to be discussed and addressed. So let's work on solving them rather than pretending that a democratic result that some don't like is somehow illegitimate and should be ignored. And that's from George Hollingbury.
Now it's time for your say. With the university able to expand, we ask if there are too many students in Winchester, and Jane has the answers.
And very positive they are too. Daryl Henry, 60, from Twyford, said, I like the students. They help the whole city to stay active. There are so many shops closing that it's nice to still see some life in the city as things are changing so rapidly. Victor Osmond, 82, from Winchester, said, the university is good for the town, and on the whole, they're quite nice young people. I've been here 20-odd years, and it doesn't seem to be an issue. It's a lively city. I'm glad all these people are here. Emma Schofield, 19, from Badger Farm, said, for the amount of students that are here, I don't think the city suffers at all. When I go out, everyone is very polite, and I think it adds to the culture of Winchester. And Brother George Watkinson, 73, from the Hospital of St Cross, said, no, how can there be too many students? They're educating themselves, for God's sake.
And now we're going back through the mists of time for historical news items from our files, starting 25 years ago, read by Heather.
Friday, September the 18th, 1992. There's two items. The New Books Shopping Centre in Winchester has won national acclaim for the way its distinctive design blends with the architecture of the ancient capital of Wessex. Hidden beneath the shopping complex is a true feat of engineering, a multi-storey underground car park which can accommodate 200 cars. That car park has just won an Association of Chief Police Officers, ACPO, gold medal for security design, and the commercial manager of the centre, Pam Gillard, and car park manager for the City Council, Ron Lambert, were due to be presented with this accolade by Michael Jack, Minister of State for the Home Office, at a ceremony at the Metropole Hotel yesterday. The underground car park at the Brooks boasts the latest security measures and is guarded full-time by security staff. The second item says, Winchester Health Authority announced this week that it had run out of money for certain categories of non-emergency operations. Wednesday's meeting of the Health Authority was forced to suspend such medical treatment until money becomes available in the next financial year, April 1993. This potentially includes all categories of non-emergency treatment like hip replacements and knee operations which arise as a result of GPs referring patients to other areas of the country. Such cases occur when the doctor believes a more specialist treatment is available for a patient which does not exist in the local branches of the NHS under contract to Winchester Health Authority.
And what have we got from 50 years ago, please, Nick?
Right, it's Saturday, September the 16th, 1967, and two items again. Firstly, at a planning inquiry in Bishop's Waltham on Wednesday, Mr. Roger Brooks, solicitor, suggested that the boundary of the green belt at Denmead could be altered and a better line of division obtained. This, he said, would allow for the development of 8 acres of land at Soak Farm off Hambledon Road to provide 111 houses, the subject of the appeal. The Kenway Development Company Limited were appealing against the refusal of the Hampshire County Council to allow them to develop the land. And the second item. The dedication of St Barnabas Church in Froman Road Week this Saturday afternoon by the Bishop of Winchester, Dr Faulkner Allison, will be an event of great significance in the history of the church in Winchester for two reasons. Firstly, it is only the second new Anglican church to be built in the city this century. And secondly, it will represent a further step towards the unity between the Methodist and the Church of England. 13 years ago, when Weak Manor Estate was still being erected, it was due to the foresight and enthusiasm of the rector, the Reverend A.C. Hopkins, and the Church Council that a site for the church and parsonage was secured.
100 years ago.
100 years ago was Saturday, September the 15th, 1917. Firstly, a special general meeting of the members of Royal Winchester Golf Club as to its future was held at Dumper's Restaurant, Jury Street, Winchester, yesterday, at which a resolution was submitted on behalf of the committee. The following report was circulated with notice of the meeting. In accordance with the resolution passed by the special general meeting held on the 22nd of February last, the course was closed on the 25th of March, and shortly afterwards the staff, with the exception of Mrs. West, obtained employment elsewhere. The committee made arrangements that the greens and tees should be kept mown sufficiently to prevent their being spoilt altogether, but so far as the course is concerned, they have taken no steps beyond this. And the second item, there was a sad fatality at Crawley near Winchester on the evening of yesterday week. Corn was being cut in a field known as 100 Acres on the estate of Captain G. Philippi towards the close of a long day of work. It was past 8 o'clock. Two self-binding machines were in use, and one of these was drawn by 3 horses, of which 2 were rather young animals. The clatter caused when the driver put the machine in gear to restart cutting startled one of the young horses, and it bolted, the others going with it. The occurrence was witnessed by Mr. J.G. Dring, a bailiff on the estate, and without hesitation he made a dash forward, evidently with the intention of trying to stop the horses. He held out his hand to grip the rein, but he unfortunately stumbled over a sheaf of corn on the ground and fell in front of the machine. Mr. Dring was seriously injured in the abdomen, and he died on the spot in less than half an hour.
And 200 years, Heather, please.
Monday, September the 15th, 1817. On Thursday night last, the dwelling house of John Bolton of Highclere was broken into by 3 men, and while they were plundering the home, a woman and her son, who slept in the chamber above, descended from the window and gave the alarm in the next house. By the speedy arrival of the neighbours, 2 of the robbers were secured, one of them being shot in the scuffle and is since dead, whose name is Thomas Peacock, bricklayer of East Woodhay. The other made his escape with the property, and a reward is offered for his apprehension. And the second item. Yesterday morning, between 5 and 6 o'clock, the body of a newborn infant was picked up, wrapped in flannel, in St. Mary's churchyard, and on inspection it was found to have been strangled. A coroner's inquest was taken at the Duke of York Inn, St. Mary's, and after hearing some of the evidence, the jury adjourned till Tuesday next in order to discover the unnatural mother.
And now Nick is going to read an alternative look at the news in Belgarum Diary.
Yes, the timeless bounty. When people in the future ask what made the British different to other people, they could do worse than look at horticultural and allotment societies. Shawford and Compton Horticultural and Winchester Allotment Societies have sent in reports of their recent annual summer shows. A few years ago, there were doubts about the long-term future of such organisations, but many appear to be in rude health. Both shows had hundreds of entries and some impressive exhibits of vegetables, fruit, flowers and flower arrangements. The homecraft sections produced delicious and tempting looking bakes and jams. The shows had classes for photography, knitwear, embroidery and sections for youngsters. Cups and trophies were presented and visitors and friends were able to round off the afternoon with a welcome cup of tea and homemade cakes. While some horticultural societies struggle to keep their members, both these are thriving. Shawford and Compton meets on the third Tuesday of every month at All Saints Church of England Primary School in Compton. New members and visitors are very welcome. Is Belgarum alone in thinking these photographs are beautiful in a very British way? They show something gentle, understated, elegant and timeless, and that, of course, is describing four accompanying photographs to this article, one with a beautifully full table of onions and other vegetables, some very colourful pink and yellow roses and other flowers, and a lovely spread of cakes on another table. Too delicious to talk about.
And first person this week is by Joanna Lewis and is read by Jane.
And is headed, "The Uglification Continues." I don't know about you, but I'm perplexed. I've got three questions mulling around my tired brain. Where did the summer go? Can it be strictly season already? And what has happened to our tradition of local democracy? For while many of us have been lost in deep thought, either on holidays or down the bottom of the garden, stressing about nuclear Armageddon or stuck on a train, our council seems to have gone and removed it. It's time for those three words again. Station Approach Scheme. Oh no, not another planning headache for us to grapple with, I hear you groan. I'm afraid so. But I sympathise. It's like going back to school and having to do double algebra on the first day. You'd much rather be thinking about something else, and it makes your head want to explode. But we must face the music, and it's playing a familiar and very bad tune. As this newspaper reported on its front page in mid-August, the plans for station approach have been becoming more and more enveloped in secrecy. Decisions are being made behind closed doors by an ever more narrow, self-selecting and unrepresentative cabinet committee. Here's a recap, because it's hard to follow all these schemes, plus their twists and turns, unless you're a member of Mensa. The council launched its development plans for this site early last year. The public was to have a choice of five designs by five architects. Three dropped out. Then the plan was presented to a meeting of the whole council in July 2016. It was rejected, thankfully. Following in the wake of public opposition to the hideous and inappropriate plans for Silver Hill, the proposed buildings were judged, rightly so, much too large and unattractive. Full council then voted in an amendment requiring that the business case for offices be proved first. With flimsy evidence, it was. However, the basic plans for station approach haven't changed, and to make certain the plan doesn't falter again this time, the new set of council leaders are ensuring that you, the public, won't be given any choice of architect. Plus, all decisions on the progress of the project will be made by 8 members of the cabinet rather than by the 45 members of the full council. So, what have we got unfolding at the station scheme? It would seem more secrecy, darkness and cloaks of invisibility than a Harry Potter movie. I wouldn't be surprised if Dobby the house elf appears on the credit sheet. And if this gets us to the fundamental flaw in this process, from being pushed through in an undemocratic way, the lack of openness and discussion will likely mean, then, undue influence for those architects and officers of the brutalist school of building design who cling to a vision of urban architecture as being good enough if it's big, of its time, and looks like an airport terminal. Instead of following the example of other historic cities that have new old-style buildings like Bath, they go for the easy and cheap option. They want glass, they want grey, and they want to make their mark. Earlier this month, the architects appointed pledged to scope the mix and balance across the site. Scope. That kind of jargon does not bode well. They are to produce a public realm strategy and concept design. Shouldn't that have been given to them first? Again, architects are not provided with a clear, transparent and publicly approved design brief which has an unequivocal Winchester-ness and heritage-sensitive basic principles. Winchester has so many buildings already that leave people asking the same question. How did that get planning permission in such a historic city? We don't want any more architectural disasters. Looking at the recent developments around the station is evidence enough that the uglification continues. Council leaders fear public scrutiny, We must insist upon it.
And my Winchester this week is an interview with Corinne Bespolker of St Giles Hill, co-founder of the charity the Cameron Bespolker Trust. Heather reads Corinne's favourite things about the city.
When asked, what's your favourite restaurant or cafe? Corinne replied, my favourite restaurant is number 5 because it has an amazing selection of vegetarian food. What's your favourite pub or bar? I like the atmosphere of the Black Boy on Wharf Hill and being able to sit outside and eat some excellent pub food. What's your favourite shop? The Hambledon on the Square, because it has such an eclectic mix of home goods, candles, perfumes, toys and clothes for men and women, and the staff are always so friendly and helpful. What's your favourite building? Oh, definitely the Cathedral. It's such a spiritual and calming place. Favourite view? I love the view over Winchester from St Giles Hill. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? I always associate Jane Austen with Winchester and have always enjoyed all her novels. What is Winchester's best kept secret? The walk to the beautiful early Norman church, St Andrew's in Chilcombe, via the South Downs Way. What's the best thing about Winchester? The best thing is being able to walk up St Catherine's Hill, sit on Cameron's bench and be surrounded by nature. Worst? Oh, the worst thing is the traffic and the one-way system. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? I would build a tunnel for the M3 under Twyford Down, which would eliminate the noise and restore the back of St Catherine's Hill. Describe Winchester in one sentence. A beautiful, historic town within easy reach of wonderful English countryside.
And now we have a range of things that are what's on, beginning Friday the 15th of September. Thanks to Barbara Chase for providing this information. On Thursday the 21st of September, Winchester Cathedral Undercroft at 3 p.m, tea at 3, a chance to enjoy tea with friends and chat. All are welcome. On Tuesday the 26th of September, Winchester Cathedral Choir, 1 p.m, lunchtime concert by Cathedral organists Andrew Lumsden and George Castle, and that's free with a retiring collection. And on Saturday the 23rd of September, Romsey Abbey at 7:30 p.m, Royal Marines Association Concert Band and Military Wives Choir, a last night at the Proms in aid of Royal Marines charity. Tickets are £15, and there's a phone number 01794 512987. That's 01794 512987. Friday the 29th of September, Winchester Guildhall, Winchester Festival of Coffee, in aid of Macmillan Cancer Support. And on Saturday the 30th of September and Sunday the 1st of October, 10 p.m, 5 p.m, Winchester Cathedral and Grounds, Winchester Harvest Festival, celebrating the county's food and farming. Celebration Evensong at 3:30 p.m. on Sunday. And Sunday, the 1st of October, 3:30 p.m, Thorndon Hall, Chandler's Ford, Southampton Concert Orchestra, offer an afternoon of popular music. The tickets are £10, and if you call 02380 246 555, that's 02380 246 555. Finally, Look. Open Sight Hampshire presents Eye Contact 2017. Hampshire's biggest free exhibition brings together the latest equipment and services available to those with or at risk of sight loss. On Wednesday the 4th of October 2017, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Aegeus Bowl, Botley Road, West End, Hampshire 20303XH. For more information, call 02380 641244. That's 02380 641244. And now the lighting up time ends on Friday today. It ended at 6:41 a.m. and it begins at 7:19 p.m. On Wednesday the 20th, It ends at 6:48 a.m. and begins at 7:08 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. If there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. And now we continue with Nick reading the editorial comment.
Losing sight of the role of public service. At the end of the Second World War, the leaders of the Great Three met at Yalta to discuss the future of Europe. Stalin, Churchill and Roosevelt stated their aims. Stalin announced that he wanted to take in Spain. The dictator did not really want to oust General Franco. His demand was designed to make his real aims, subjugating the whole of Eastern Europe, look more reasonable. Are we seeing something similar with Hampshire County Council's budget proposals? No. The Chronicle does not think council leader Roy Perry wants to invade Spain, at least not for the moment. Is the council proposing an horrendous set of cuts, cynically knowing that it won't actually shut half the recycling centres, slash bus subsidies and school crossing patrols, and that by comparison, the eventual reductions will look reasonable? Except that it will not be reasonable. This £1 billion a year authority is proposing seemingly small cuts, but which will have a disproportionate effect on many vulnerable people. The answer lies in slashing the bureaucracy at the castle, saving money to protect frontline services. Why does the council allow staff to park at the Tower Street HQ? A waste of valuable space. Why is there still a temporary car park at Bar End? A valuable space. The answer is the council is losing sight of its role as a servant of the public.
And now we're going to carry on items of general news, starting with one from Jane.
The first one is U-turn over RVS at hospital. Staff and volunteers providing charitable services at Winchester's main hospital who were previously told to leave by managers will now stay. As reported in the Chronicle, dismayed volunteers from the Royal Voluntary Service were told they would have to leave the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in October, some after working there for more than 30 years. The charity works across Hampshire to offer support to elderly people and have been involved at Royal Hampshire County Hospital since 1941. For 76 years, they have provided a trolley service and a newspaper round, as well as a shop inside the main reception. The decision would have affected 60 volunteers and 3 part-time paid staff. Now, in a U-turn, Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust have confirmed an agreement with RVS to continue running the shop and trolley service. RVS will continue to gift to the Trust, in lieu of rent, the same sum it has done previously. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospital, said, "We are delighted that the RVS will continue to have a presence at RHCH, that's the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, and are looking forward to working closely with the charity in the future. Everyone at the Trust really appreciates the important role carried out by the RVS and their hard-working group of volunteers and employees, so we are really pleased to have this agreement in place." The Chronicle asked the Trust what had led to the decision, but a spokesman declined to elaborate. Kate Bull, Executive Director of Retail for RVS, said in a statement, "We remain committed to our volunteers at RHCH and to continuing to serve patients, visitors and staff at the hospital. It's great news that an agreement is in place and we look forward to working with the Trust, continuing the relationship enjoyed by both sides for so many years." Originally founded in 1938 as the Women's Voluntary Services for Air Raid Precautions, RVS is the largest volunteering organisation in British history. And this is accompanied by a picture of the hospital the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, with its main front door through which there is the shop run by this RVS for 76 years, since the dark days of World War II, it says.
Shedding more light on the history of Hyde, and there's a picture of a young digger from last year's community dig, brightly clad in a stripy top, earnestly and carefully scraping away to see what she can find. Hyde 900 has launched its biggest season of events yet, telling the story of King Alfred and Hyde Abbey, thanks to lottery funding. With support from the Heritage Lottery Fund, the Winchester Community Group is creating a major new website to share the site's heritage, as well as unveiling finds from last spring's community dig. There will be a series of lectures ranging on subjects as diverse as Jane Austen's link to Hyde and the Liber Vitae, Hyde Abbey's most valuable manuscript. Guided walks, tile workshops, and the culmination of Project Space are also planned. This is a really significant time for Hyde 900, when a number of key projects start to come to fruition, said the group chairman, Steve Marper. Over the past 9 months, we've enjoyed the support of the Heritage Lottery Fund, as well as the cooperation of a number of partners, including the Universities of Winchester and Southampton, St Bartholomew's Church, the Friends of Hyde Abbey Garden, the Hampshire Cultural Trust, and the staff and students of St Bede's School. It demonstrates the large and growing range of people and organisations who've been inspired to help us raise the profile of Hyde Abbey and its unique status as the final resting place of King Alfred the Great. As part of the Heritage Open Day initiative, the season started with an exhibition and workshops linked to the tiles of Hyde Abbey, held on the Chapter House lawn of the cathedral. A free lecture on Jane Austen, Money and the Hyde Connection by Professor Emma Cleary of Southampton University's Department of English Literature and Helen Paul, Southampton University's Department of Economics, is next up on September the 21st at 7:30 in the School of Art, Park Avenue. On September the 28th at 7:30, local historian Dr. John Hare will speak about the final chapter in the story of Hyde Abbey and other religious establishments in Hampshire, with an account of their dissolution under Henry VIII. Next month sees the King Alfred Weekend launch, with Hyde soldiers on October the 19th and the commemoration in St Bartholomew's Church of the Hyde fatalities from the battlegrounds of 1917. On October the 20th, Professor Simon Keynes from Cambridge University lectures in St Bartholomew's about the significance of the Liber Vitae, Hyde Abbey's great book of life, which embodies the soul of the Abbey institution across the centuries. The HLF-funded series of free lectures concludes on October the 21st with a presentation by Professor John Collis of the University of Sheffield on the development of archaeology in Winchester, and in Hyde particularly, over the past 60 years.
Another retailer to go. A major retailer on Winchester High Street will be closing its doors soon for the last time at that location. LK Bennett is set to shut, blaming high rent and business rates, with closing down sale signs on display in its windows. The news follows a number of other well-known and independent brands leaving the city, including Zoe Jewellers, Next and Jaeger. In July, fashion retailer Cadogan & Co, which has been in business for more than 20 years in the square, went into administration. But at the same time, Turtle Bay is due to move in at the former Tony and Guy site at the top of St George's Street, and discount retailer TK Maxx are also set to open a new shop in the Brooks Shopping Centre in the former Beals premises. Tesco is also set to move into the unit where River Island used to sit on the High Street. Amanda Harrison, assistant manager at LK Bennett, said the decision was based on high rents and business rates. "We have had customers coming in saying it's really sad to see us go," she said. They don't want another coffee shop or restaurant, and there aren't enough clothing shops, especially not for teenagers. We've actually been doing really well, and we've been up on last year, but it's a huge space. I understand LK Bennett would like to stay in Winchester, but would need to find another site for a convenient price. The shop's last day of trading will be Sunday, September the 24th. It has one of the largest shop units in Winchester, having taken over the site when Debenhams concentrated on its main store lower down the high street. Catherine Turnus, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, said, "We know they have been looking to get out of their lease for some time, so although the news is not a surprise, LK Bennett will of course be sadly missed from the high street. The brand is a firm favourite with city shoppers, and we have welcomed their support and involvement in Winchester Fashion Week for several years." Ms. Turnus added, "I am certain we will see the brand return in the future if the right unit and deal can be struck." And this article is accompanied by a picture of the front of LK Bennett. And the important thing you need to know is in the window it says closing down sale, everything reduced.
And here we have history opens up in Festival of Heritage. Winchester Heritage Open Days returned to the city last weekend, with thousands of visitors taking part in the country's largest annual heritage festival. This year's event was the biggest to date, with 70 places opening their doors to the public for the weekend, including the Chesil Theatre, Barter Memorial Chapel and the Friends Meeting House in Colebrook Street. Several new events proved popular, including a guided walk around Peninsula Barracks by Winchester architect Hugh Thomas, who helped to save the buildings from demolition in the 1990s, and rare tours of some of Winchester College's historic buildings. As part of the festivities, Winchester historian Phil Yates gave his final backstage tour of the Theatre Royal. Mr. Yates has been a volunteer at the theatre since 1974 and was part of the Gang of Six that saved the building from demolition in 1977 and has been giving tours ever since. On his retirement, Phil said, "It has been great fun gaining knowledge all the time and extending the tours in recent years to the Fly Tower in the highest part of the building. Over the years, I've met so many nice people on my tours." Winchester family, the Skinners, participated in many of the events over the weekend. Mum Catherine said, "After living in Winchester for over 14 years, it was great to be tourists in our city over the weekend, discovering so many things for the first time. We loved the Winchester Heritage Open Days." Local coordinator Nikki Gottlieb said, "This year's festival has been fantastic, and Becky Brown and I are delighted with the compliments and positive feedback we have already received. We would like to thank all the venue teams and event organisers who work so hard to make the weekend such a success. We're also very grateful to our sponsors, Winchester College, Winchester's BID and Hampshire County Council. As we continue to build on this enthusiasm and to increase awareness of this showcase event for the city, we are looking to secure a publicity sponsor for the Winchester Heritage Open Days in 2018. And this is accompanied by three photographs of things which were able to be visited. The first one is artists at the Colour Factory, which is a little building where artists gather and paint and create items together, including the bollards, I believe, that are painted, that dot around the city centre with interesting pictures on them. And they were clearly serving a delicious tea that was in the River Park Leisure Centre, and there are scones and jam and pretty teacups and plates. Then also there's the Winchester model at the City Museum, open to the public for nothing, and there's this huge model of the City of Winchester, which has been looking for a home and now seems to be in the City Museum. And the last one is an enthusiastic lady grinding a stone in Burselden Windmill.
Estate residence common room is saved. Stanmore residents breathed a sigh of relief after their common room at the Valley was saved. The City Council had proposed converting the facility into flats, but a campaign led by St Luke Ward Councillor Jamie Scott and MP Steve Brine led to a change of heart. A petition from tenants, as well as a deputation to senior councillors and lobbying from Councillors Scott and Mr Brine, convinced the council to convert only part of the space to provide a one-bedroom flat while retaining the rest as a communal facility. It will include a meeting space which will be redecorated with new carpets, as well as a kitchen, toilets and storage area. Mr Brine and Councillor Scott visited the common room to pass on the good news over a cup of tea and to run the summer quiz. Valley resident Phyllis Tucker said this is very good news. The common room is companionship for many of us. I would miss it dreadfully if it had been lost. And Councillor Jamie Scott said, some say there isn't a community spirit left in Stanmore, but clearly that's not the case, with residents in the valley meeting every week in their common room. And there's a picture of about a dozen smiling valley residents of both genders, flanked on one side by Jamie Scott and on the other by Stephen Brine, all with their thumbs up.
Reporter reveals joys of covering Trump. A renowned political journalist giving a talk at Winchester Cathedral has said it is more likely President Trump will be re-elected than impeached. The BBC's North America editor, John Sopel, has been reporting on the White House and the ups and downs of Trump's presidency. At the Friends of Winchester Cathedral's annual lecture, he revealed his first-hand experiences, travelling aboard Air Force One, interviewing President Obama, questioning President Trump, gun shows, Missouri riots, all to hundreds of guests. The talk, which was introduced by Bruce Parker, chairman of Friends of Winchester Cathedral, was based on Mr. Sopel's newly published book, If Only They Didn't Speak English. Mr. Sopel has previously lived in Cheriton, began his career at Radio Solent. To groans, he said there was more chance of Trump would serve a second term than be removed, saying that his fans will support him regardless of whether his legislation is pushed through. He added, however, that the three branches of government have shown themselves to be pretty robust in reference to controversial announcements such as the Muslim travel ban. Speaking about covering the presidential race, he said, "It was an extraordinary time, and you have the most unorthodox president that the world has known." He said that part of reason for Trump's victory had been a failure to recognise the deep unhappiness brought about by the financial crisis. There was a powerful feeling that there was no more social mobility, he said. "What I saw going to Ohio, the old steel towns, was that the steel jobs were not coming back. There was just a frustration of the people that no one was speaking to them." When asked if the Democrats would be able to field a credible candidate in the next election, Mr. Sopel said, "I think what we are going to see in 2020 is an awful lot more independence. Do the Democrats have a serious problem? Yes." He cited possible presidential runs from Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg and actor George Clooney. And this article is accompanied by a picture of Mr. Sopel addressing this meeting.
And here we have more charging points to boost electric cars. New charging points are set up to appear across Hampshire, including Winchester, to increase the use of electric cars. The County Council is investing £2.7 million to provide 40 electric car charging points for vehicles. Rapid vehicle charging points, which only require 30 minutes for a full charge, will be installed at South Park and Ride near Winchester, Romsey Rapids Leisure Centre, the A31 Furlong Car Park in Ringwood and the Civic Way North Car Park in Fareham. Meanwhile, 6 fast charge points, which require 3 to 4 hours charge, will be installed at South Street Car Park in Gosport, as well as at South Park and Ride and Romsey Road, Winchester. The council will also look to convert 156 of its own vehicle fleet and 23 staff pool cars on a phased basis from diesel to electric power. Councillor Mel Kendall, County Council Executive Member for Economic Development, said, "There are now more than 2 million electric cars in the world, and in May this year, a record 4.4% of new cars sold in the UK were hybrid or electric models. However, more work is needed to power a further surge, which is why we're delighted that so many local partners joined us today to share plans and ideas. As a county council, it's important we show leadership, but recognise we stand a much better chance of succeeding by working together with partner authorities and the private sector. The council's new venture is part of its ongoing energy and carbon management programme to reduce carbon emissions and cutting long-term energy costs. Since 2010, the council has claimed that it has saved £29.9 million in energy costs and cut carbon emissions by 35.8%. It comes as the car industry responds to tighter emissions standards that will apply across their fleets from 2021. Volvo announced last month that every car it launches from 2019 will have an electric motor, marking the end of cars that have only an internal combustion engine and placing electrification at the core of its future business. The announcement, it said, represents one of the most significant moves to embrace electrification and highlights how, over a century after the invention of the internal combustion engine, electrification is paving the way for a new chapter in automobile history." And this is accompanied by a photograph of Councillor Mel Kendall, the Executive Member for Economic Development, with an electric car which has on the side of it "Born Electric" with "Zero Emissions Monthly Rental." So this is clearly a car that you can rent. And instead of the petrol pump at the back of the car, it has a plug going out to an electrical socket which you can plug in to recharge it.
Hampshire Country Sports Day, Tichborne Park. It's the last Country Sports Day at Tichborne Park. The Hampshire Country Sports Day has revelled in all things hunting, horses and hounds. It has been held for the last time at Tichborne Park near Alresford, which was its home for the last 20 years. Because in 2018, the show is moving to the Bearley Estate at East Meon near Petersfield to allow the event to grow in size. Tichborne Park near Alresford on Saturday attracted around 4,000 to 5,000 people, had a wide range of attractions, including the Inter-Hunt show jumping competition, a demonstration on wildfowl from hunter-gatherer Christy Green the Cornishman, and a falconry display and gun dog demo. The British Hunting Collection returned with a unique display of over 300 hunting uniforms, as well as records and items dating back as far as the 18th century. A record 75 trade stands offered everything from equestrian and countryside clothing to handbags and jewellery. There were country paintings and craft gifts, hunting, shooting and fishing equipment, and a variety of food and drink vendors with a licensed bar. Visitors were able to try country pursuits like clay pigeon shooting and fly fishing. Delighted spectators saw crowd pleasers like terrier racing and the Inter-Hunt mounted relay, when rival hunts racing on quad bikes and on foot erect hurdles which are then jumped by members of the hunt on their horses before being dismantled again by the quad bike teams racing against the clock. Donations to the show, which has been running for more than 30 years, will be given to the Countryside Alliance to help their campaign to improve rural communities.
End the eyesores. A proposal to tackle unsightly trade waste bins in Winchester was welcomed by city councillors. An initiative was set out in a report to Cabinet on Tuesday, detailing three core solutions. These are ad hoc specialist advice for businesses seeking to improve their waste storage, costing up to £10,000, a new transit bin store for St Morris's Covert estimated to cost £9,700, and consideration of further provision of transit and long-term bin stores. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Environment, said the proactive approach was inspired by a presentation from Westminster City Council in February. Councillor Anne Weir, chairman of Winchester Town Forum, thanked Councillors Ian Tate and Liz Hutchinson for keeping the issue in the spotlight. She said, "This has been a matter of concern and regular debate for some time. We all feel that Winchester cannot stand still as a historic and retail centre. I think that Winchester needs to move into a pioneering mode on trade waste."
And this little item is headed Pumpkin Day. An organic farm near Winchester will be celebrating the arrival of autumn with Pumpkin Day next month. Lots of family activities will be held on Saturday, October the 28th, 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. at Upper Norton Farm near Sutton Scotney. Its operators, Riverford, promise an event is full of lively activities, tasty food and a good dose of fresh farm air. Children's activities include pumpkin carving, face painting, seed potting, worm digging and much more. Riverford founder Guy Watson said, "Our Pumpkin Day is a brilliant day out with loads for both kids and adults to enjoy right here on the farm. It's also a brilliant way to celebrate the arrival of autumn and all the fantastic food that it brings." And Riverford Farm's postcode is SO213QF and the telephone number is 01803 227 227.
And I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending 15th of September 2017. Thank you to our editors, Jane Thomas, Jean Gardner and Sheila Shepherd. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Noel Thorpe-Tracy. Thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you have finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with the laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.